Good afternoon, and welcome to the chambers of the Portland City Council. Today is Thursday, November 28th, 2012. Just one more day with this mustache I can shave. It looks like hell. Is that what you...
Are you going to sell tickets to the shaving or something?
Christine is not impressed with my mustache. I thought you said it looked like hell. Okay. City Council will come to order. How are you today, Carla?
Fine, thank you.
All right. Can you please call the roll?
Mm-hmm. Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman? Adams?
Here. Can you please read the title to the time certain in front of us?
Okay. Did you want them both read? Okay.
What was that?
Both items
please. Read.
1357, accept the residential out-of-the-mud street-by-street program report and direct the Bureau of Transportation and the Bureau of Environmental Services to implement a street improvement program that provides affordable, safe, and context-based streets for all modes. And 1358, authorize a local improvement district deferral option for certain local improvement districts.
So just a few introductory comments. The City Council is familiar with the basic outlines of the Up Out of the Mud street-by-street initiative because we had a really, I think, a really good work session where everyone had an opportunity to ask questions and add their own ideas to what we're considering in front of us. So I'll just go over some of the basics. There are about 2,070 centerline miles in the city of Portland. Approximately 60 of those centerline miles are still dirt or gravel streets, and 45 of those centerline miles, again of about 2,000, are unpaved streets that are in single-family residential areas or on residential streets. What we're talking about today is to make to legalize a shared street form, a form of design. And the important part about legalizing it is that folks that choose this option would be eligible for the city-backed financing, which is some of the most accessible financing options. Today we are going to be the first reading on authorizing those streets. We will now be offering a variety of legal street standards. Christine Leon, who is the... a director in the Bureau of Planning, the Bureau of Transportation, and Chris Newland have been working on this for some time. I think we've been working on this, Christine, for at least 2 years. Katja Dillman and before her, Catherine Charlo. So I'm excited to begin the process of making a decision that will allow a lot more people living on muddy or dusty streets to have some proper pavement. Would you like to begin?
So my name is Christine Leon, and I'm a principal engineer in the Portland Bureau of Transportation, and I manage the Transportation's Development and Street Systems Management Division. And so we have a PowerPoint slide presentation for you this afternoon, and we're calling this the Street by Street Out of the Mud Initiative. So as the mayor has said, no two streets are alike, and yet we have one standard that is set to try to improve those 45 miles of dirt and gravel streets, in addition to about 167 miles of residential streets that are paved but don't have curbs and don't have sidewalks. So that represents about 22% of our residential streets, and it's the subset of the local streets. Like the mayor said, it's not just the local streets, it's only the local streets that are adjacent to single-family residential zones that we're talking about today. This one standard, the traditional standard, is out of reach financially for many people, and those are the people that are responsible for improving the streets to standard. Plus, it doesn't afford enough flexibility to the neighborhoods and to the context of the natural environment and the existing conditions that exist in our built-in environment, our built-in neighborhoods. So the mayor requested that PBOT develop an affordable, safe, context-based program for improving our residential streets, and to develop a program that allows a deferred option for a local improvement district for low-income eligible LIDs. So that's what we're going to present to you today. This effort has been done in collaboration with our stakeholders group, neighborhood association groups, engineers, planners, and with input from bureaus of environmental services, fire, and Bureau of Development Services, as well as experts in the Bureau of Transportation. So Rich is going to go through a couple of slides to talk about our outreach efforts and our input, and then we'll go through the more mundane ordinance requirements.
Very exciting ordinance.
Sexy details. What are you talking, mundane?
So like Christine said, the foundation for developing the street-by-street initiative has been the stakeholder and technical advisory committees. They've been meeting since March to identify and discuss the wide variety of issues that needed to be addressed to develop the new design standards and program elements. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the citizen, business, community organization, and city bureau representatives who served on these committees and helped develop the initiative. Next slide. In addition, the project has received input through presentations to 13 different community organizations that have a direct interest in the issues related to the improvement and function of residential streets. And finally, a key group of stakeholders in this discussion are the neighborhoods with high concentrations of dirt and gravel streets. Our broader public involvement process has targeted six areas with the highest concentrations for additional input through the neighborhood associations and district coalitions in those areas. These neighborhoods include Brentwood, Darlington, Woodstock, Cully, Linton, Southwest Portland, and Outer East Side Portland. And the message back has been very clear. At a minimum, we need new tools, specifically ones that address the issue of affordability, to entice greater numbers of people to participate in improving their streets.
Thanks, Rich. So what we have is an ordinance that lays out six requests. We have six requests in the first ordinance, and then a second supplemental ordinance that deals specifically with the LID financing. And so I'm going to run through each one of these. Three are more straightforward, and the other three are more intertwined program development requests that we have. So essentially, the first one is to adopt the report, second is to adopt the standards, and then third, to include the pavement of these standards in as a city maintenance obligation, which is consistent with our code, and then to develop policy to guide residential street concept approval, because now that we're going to have new choices, we need a process to decide which street is going to get which standard. To offer a developer in lieu of fee. We talked about this at the council work session. We were hoping we would get further along than we have on this, but it's going to take some more time. So we're asking council to help us by pushing us to develop this is continuing in a more collaborative manner. And then finally, to offer a deferral financing through a local improvement district for streets designed and constructed as shared or separated streets where they're eligible. So I'm going to cover the last item basically through the second ordinance toward the latter part of the presentation. So the first item, and I tried to put asterisks in the titles of the slide presentation that really represent one of the elements of the ordinance that we're asking for, is to adopt the report. And the report is really boiled down into three different elements. One is the history and the challenge and the problem that we're presented with. And then the two standards that we're asking for today. And then some of the program elements that we need to go along with these standards, which is the input and approval process, the maintenance component, and then the financing issues. So a bit about history. I'm not a historian, but I thought this was actually kind of fascinating. So finding affordable streets has been an issue for the city for more than 20 years. So in the late 80s, council adopted a report to start looking at skinny streets And in 1991, our skinny street standards were adopted, which really reduced the pavement width and allowed for queuing streets. And we still use those standards today. There's also an affordability request. And so we, in 1991, adopted a substandard street component. But those substandard streets were not to be maintained by the city. So there's some complexities and some issues that are associated with those substandard streets today that are not working for us. In 1995, there was a local improvement district that was formed called Cheap and Skinny Streets in the Brentwood-Darlington neighborhood. And that enabled a number of miles in those of formerly dirt and gravel streets to be improved. That LID, though, was very, very heavily subsidized. So, again, in the early part of the 90s, we were looking at coming up with more affordable standards. In the latter part of the 90s, we, as a city, adopted different standards and new programs to stay up with current requirements. We started with some modifications to the LID program in 2000, and then in 1998, we adopted the pedestrian design guidelines. In 1999, also the stormwater management manual was adopted. In 2004, we adopted as an administrative rule the development design standards for streets that are constructed under land use or building options. So we've been changing as the times have been changing and the requirements have been changing, but we still don't have enough tools that give us what we want to do today. Streets are not being improved fast enough. So in the last 5 years, there's been really more of a radical shift towards the shared street concept. In 2005 through 2009, the idea of a complete street started emerging across the nation. And it really means to do a context-based approach where streets are designed for all users. I mean, that's really kind of what we do here in Portland, but across the nation it became a movement, if you will. Here in Portland as well, in 2009, we launched our Neighborhood Greenways program. And then in 2012, we got some changes through ORS that enabled us to reduce speeds on these neighborhood greenways. So neighborhood greenways basically are streets where bikes and pedestrians are given priority over motor vehicles. In April 2012, the Portland Plan was adopted, and there's a number of action items and policies within the Portland Plan that support a shared street and new tools that allow flexibility in our residential street standards. And then finally, in August, the Cully Neighborhood Transportation Plan was adopted, and that was a one-year effort that, through neighborhood input, identified the shared street and the separated street, which we have for you today, as concepts to be applied in that neighborhood. So in 1999, a pedestrian and bike planner named Dan Burden published the Street Design Guidelines for Healthy Neighborhoods. And in his research, he found that pedestrians in most cities say they want well-designed neighborhood alleys, lanes, and streets that keep motorist speeds between 10 and 25 miles an hour and provide on-street parking, sidewalks, shade, benches, street lamps, and other community amenities. It's still applicable today. And he also made this conclusion, which I'm going to read. It's about a paragraph long, that I think really sets the solid foundation for what we are trying to achieve today. So in his report, he states, walkable, bike-friendly, transit-oriented neighborhoods eliminate the need for many non-essential motorized trips. Traffic volume, speed, and noise are reduced. By slowing motorized traffic, people discover that the front portions of their homes are pleasant places. They spend more time in front yards and porches and meet neighbors along walkways and at street corners. Putting more people outside further slows traffic and enhances neighborhood security. As more people meet, make friends, and share information, neighborhood bonds are strengthened, and people watch out for each other. Over time, parents feel more comfortable about allowing their children to be outdoors more often, and they permit children to walk or bike to many of their favorite destinations. These attitudes foster activity and personal interaction that benefit the physical and emotional health of children, seniors, and indeed every resident who plays a part in creating a truly safe and healthy neighborhood. So where are these streets in the city of Portland? This map in lime green shows the residential streets that are paved with curb, and 99% of those are city maintained. The red, which really are concentrated in the Cully, Woodstock, Brentwood, Darlington, Southwest, Linton, and east of I-205, so everywhere but inner Portland, represent unpaved streets, dirt and gravel streets. Those are the 45 miles. The yellow and purple are paved without curb and sidewalk, and just one color over another designates whether or not they're city maintained or property owner maintained. The brighter green areas are the pedestrian districts, and we've taken out pedestrian districts from this subset of residential streets because based on the use and the classifications of those streets within the pedestrian districts, they're more compelled to be the traditional street. So that leaves about 22% of the residential streets could benefit from these new standards, the 45 miles of the unpaved and then the 167 miles of the paved without curb. So this is what we're offering. We have the traditional residential street standard today, and what we're proposing is the separated residential street and the shared residential street. The costs that you see adjacent to those sketches represent what a LID cost would be for 20 years for a typical 50-foot fronting single-family lot. Okay. Again, these are estimates, low-confidence estimates, based on a very broad set of assumptions. One of the big assumptions and design elements that make this affordable is the stormwater drainage that hits the impervious pavement drains off into a gravel parking and tree area adjacent to this. I mean, these streets that are out there today that are gravel and dirt and paved without curb do have some place for the stormwater to go. We believe these designs will work where the water can infiltrate and meet the stormwater management manual requirements of the 10-year event. Where they don't, then we will have to look at what stormwater treatment options are available. So I'll get into that a little bit more. So in a couple of minutes. So these are the standards that are included in the report that we're asking for adoption. It's the separated residential street standard and the shared residential street standard. So essentially 16 feet of pavement with 7-foot gravel shoulders. Trees are interspersed through the gravel shoulder area. The difference between a separated and a shared essentially is the separated has a walkway on one side. Now, with all these options, they have to be designed in the context of the street, and there is certainly flexibility within these designs to add on different elements, to change different elements, but we needed to start with some basic design standards. At one time, we thought we could just break the entire right-of-way apart and have people build building blocks and create a street, but that proved to be too complex for most people. We still want to work with people to allow that, but we have two standards that we think most people will be starting with. Here's an example of a shared street, and you've seen it before. I just want to remind you that shared streets do exist and people do use them because people feel comfortable sharing the space. There's been a tremendous amount of growth and understanding in the last 5 years of shared streets here in the United States. They're affordable and they're safe and they're what people want in our community. So there's two things too in Portland that really support the shared street. One is that our state's statutes require for a narrow street, 18 feet width or less at any point, a regulatory speed limit of 15 miles an hour. So what we're proposing to do with these streets is to post them for that speed limit so that it's easier to enforce, and then also to post signs alerting motorists and bicyclists that there are pedestrians present in these streets, and to also put traffic calming with speed bumps on each one of these streets that are shared. Other elements that can be designed into them are chicanes, serpentine alignment. Those would increase the cost of design and survey as well as maybe some more public input because it wouldn't be balanced through the center of the right-of-way.
What's a chicane?
Oh, a chicane is an abrupt curve, so that it forces a motorist to be aware, to slow down. Some of the streets in Europe, in England, they're doing DIY streets, do-it-yourself streets, and it was an outcrop of home zones. Home zones were kind of like a Wunnerf street where they were expensive to build and they were effective, but the DIY streets are doing things like chicanes with paint. So that's something that we're kind of excited about. You could maybe put a planter box or something in the street that's affordable that does that chicane kind of abrupt offset to slow down traffic.
And we do have one of these shared streets in Portland that's been around for years, and that's Northwest 13th.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, we have some festival streets and more expensive streets. What we're really focusing on is the residential need to balance the affordability and get the flexibility and the designs that work. So there are specific criteria that we have to go along with these shared streets. So we do know that the Federal Highway Administration has set out parameters for shared streets, and that's low speed, low volume, designed for use. The City of Portland has gone and identified these five items as criteria and also have defined them. So the street has to truly operate as a local access street. Some of our streets are local access, but there's a lot of cut-through traffic on them. Also, the load speed component, 15 miles an hour. Low volume, less than 500 vehicles a day. And that really gets to the they shouldn't be used for cut-through traffic. Designed for use. So what we've said is they have to be safe. The line of sight has to be adequate, and that includes maybe vertical curves, horizontal curves, vegetation. We've heard through community input that that's, you know, one of the big concerns. We don't want to have the overgrowth of trees. Trees add to the environment, but not to the extent where they block a safe situation of somebody and a pedestrian being in the street. So more maybe of shrubbery encroaching in the right-of-way. But we propose to sign and mark the streets. Detectability, the edge of the road has gravel for a purpose, and that's so that it can be detected. The cross slope is to be designed to meet our ADA guidelines, and the material also is designed to meet our requirements. So ADA has set out for walkways two criteria. And that's smoothness and firmness. And the city, when we've gone through looking at different options, have included two additional criteria for the material. That's they have to be slip resistant and low abrasive. So some of the questions, again, that we got in the community input process were, how do we assure once one of these streets are constructed that there's going to be low speeds on it and low volumes? Part of that is assured with the design and selecting the proper street, but using speed bumps is one of the most effective traffic calming techniques that is used throughout the country and throughout the world. So if a street doesn't meet the shared street criteria, for example, there's a higher volume of vehicles, or the street is a prime destination or adjacent to, say, a school and a park. And there's just really a more compelling reason to give a pedestrian more safety and comfort, then we're offering the separated street design standard. And this is a nice example from Lake Oswego that shows it's got the sidewalk off to one side. So all that, and we also can make these streets better. So they're not just streets without sidewalks. They're streets that can be enhanced for livability. The design enhancements will bring people out into the public space. There's going to be more opportunity to activate the right-of-way. They're going to be more interactive, prominent features can be provided through encroachments in the right-of-way, and it gives people variety along the way. So another kind of noteworthy change happened in 1990, again, still applicable today, but the home builders, architects, and American Society of Civil Engineers joined to publish the advanced thinking at the time, publication called Residential Streets, which advocated at that time for properly scaled streets, streets planned to avoid excess stormwater runoff, and streets which can serve as meeting places and center of community activity. So we believe that these design enhancements will enable us to meet one of that objective there. I should mention, too, that the ability to get these constructed in the right-of-way would most likely be done under an encroachment permit, and that is one of the things that my division is responsible for issuing. And with the shared and the separated street design standards now, we'll be able to control more of the folks that put things in that space that shouldn't be there that maybe block free passage. So it's something that we're going to continue to develop over the next year is the encroachment parameters regarding the shared streets and the separated streets. I mentioned drainage. So the base design assumes that the stormwater runoff will be able to go and percolate into the adjacent gravel sections. In some cases, it won't. And just looking at the maps and talking to the Bureau of Environmental Services, maybe about 50% of the city will be able to drain into the shoulders and 50% maybe not. And so in those cases, we'll have to do a public stormwater system. And the Stormwater Management Manual has the ability to be flexible to do a more system-based approach. And it's exciting that BES is at the point where they're looking very seriously into these, and Southwest Portland is a good case study that they are that they've recently embarked on. So just something to flag for people that each street will be designed and the environmental conditions looked at when we apply the base standard, but some will have to do public stormwater treatment because there is a lack of a disposal point or a lack of infrastructure. Another thing that we're asking for, this one seems pretty obvious, is that the pavement is under the city's maintenance responsibility. So this is in accordance with the City Code Chapter 1742 that says if the streets are designed to the standards of the city engineer and accepted for construction, that they'll be maintained by the city. Just a quick note, too, that the 45 miles of unpaved streets are 100% property owner maintained today. The 167 miles of streets that are paved but without curb, about 22% of those are maintained by the property owners. So if all those streets were improved, then we would add about 10% to our maintenance responsibility for just the residential streets, okay? So the next two requests are intertwined, and I'm going to talk about these in an example. And the first one is to develop a policy to guide residential street concept approval. So we want to have input from both the residents and the developer. So if a developer is coming in for an infill and is faced with a street improvement requirement, and now we have a menu of choices, we want to be able to allow the residents or the neighborhood to participate in what design standard is selected, but not at the expense of delaying any proposed development that's in the door. Intertwined with this is a proposal to develop a developer in lieu of improvements fee. Okay. So the example I'm going to use is in Southwest Portland. The yellow line is Garden Home Road, and the red is Southwest 47th Avenue. Southwest 47th Avenue is a local service street. We can call it a residential street. Southwest Garden Home is in the Fano Creek Drainage District, and it also lacks infrastructure, and so the stormwater in this area generally drains to the rivers. The street classification of Garden Home Road is a neighborhood collector, a community transit street, a city bikeway, and a city walkway. So it's got pretty high classifications, but it doesn't have those facilities on the street. It's got some bus stops. So the two pictures to the top here show development. One's an aerial view to the right. The other's a section that has occurred to the north of Garden Home Road. Okay. And you can see that the houses, when they were developed, were not required to do street improvements. They were probably required to submit waivers of remonstrance and do nothing because it was probably impractical or infeasible to build the full improvements. The section on the bottom of this slide is 47th south of Garden Home Road, where we've had some development inquiries. The street's gravel, but there's challenges with lack of transportation infrastructure, lack of stormwater structure infrastructure. So what do we do? These are the new options that we're going to be looking at, the traditional, the shared, and the separated. But how are they selected? Is it the developer that comes in and gets to select, maybe with the city, which approach we apply for that street? Or is there some input from the community? And that's what I believe. We need to have some input from the community in these streets, but how do we best do that? So we've got some approaches that we're going to continue to work on, but it's going to take some more time. The other thing to consider, and this is the developer in lieu of fee, what happens if it's impractical or infeasible to build anything on a street? You know, maybe in the gravel street example down below on this drawing, it's impractical for a one infill development to build anything. And so in that case, maybe a developer in lieu of fee would be most appropriate. Again, what are the parameters? What are the conditions of that that program? So we've come up with some scenarios. Again, we'd like to continue to work on that. This is how, you know, it could work as far as the input process. We're looking to have in the darker blue some tools that at least inform people better today, that better than they are today, of what we have to offer. We want to continue to build a strong website that lays out very succinctly the options for people and the ramifications. And then if someone does choose to come through a public works permit, which is typically what a developer is faced with, then this idea of breaking apart the concept development phase so that there's an alternatives consideration with both residents, developer, and the city. I should mention, if a public works permit is not the mechanism to improve a street, then most likely it will be a local improvement district. The process is very similar. With all local improvement districts, the scope of the project goes to city council early. So there's that built-in approval stage. So it's already inherent in the LID process. The scope is got very various stakeholders in the decision-making process. The other thing I should just note with this slide is the feedback loop. So we know that the shared and the separated street are new ideas. We have some that are operating today, but we want to be able to do some design adjustments as these get constructed. We have a couple of locations in the city that we're going to be building, either shared or a separated street, hopefully next year or the following year. And we want to use the designs to help inform a better design. Again, will the edge treatment really function the way we have intended? The site distance and vegetation, is that working appropriately? The surfacing of the pavement, we probably won't see any change in 2 years, but that's something we want to continue to evaluate. All right. Excuse me. So this slide just shows that through the Public Works appeals process, we have given consideration to infill development. So the photo on the top shows Southwest 31st Avenue before, and then the second is an enhanced drawing showing infill development where we required a separated street. I'm not an architect. They're my trees, but this is essentially what we're looking to require people to do. Excuse me. So the very final component of this is to of this ordinance is to offer financing through a local improvement district as far as it's available for one of these streets to be built, and allow a deferral program. So the second ordinance that we have before you today is, in summary, asking for this, to authorize the city to develop a LID financing contract option with a 5-year deferral for eligible LIDs. And the eligible LIDs would be essentially in B here. If the majority of the LID, oh, thank you so much. Commissioner Leonard, no less. Thanks, Commissioner Leonard. If the majority of those within the LID earn less than 80% of the median family income, that's MFI, that the LID is not eligible for a tax increment, community development block grant, or other subsidy, and that a funding source is identified in 2 years or before 2 years to support implementation of the deferral option.
Why did you choose to or have to have it that it's if everybody is below that particular income level? What if there's one family that's below that level? Why could they not apply for a deferral?
Great question.
That has to do with some of the laws that are in place regarding what we can offer people with the deferral package. Andrew Abbey and the debt team, that's what we call them, the debt team are here to, I think, delve into that more than I can answer. So
I'll wait. Thank you.
Okay. We're almost done. So to wrap up, we've received very strong support and endorsements for these new standards and concepts presented, and we'd like to acknowledge the time and the input from our citizens and other bureaus and their ability to think creatively and collaboratively on this effort, and I think diverse perspectives have really brought forth the best recommendation that we can consider today. As I noted, the financial folks are in the audience. Andrew Abbey would be the one to call upon for the question about the LID. Fire Bureau, Environmental Services, and then some experts from the Bureau of Environmental Services are also here. So thank you very much for your time, and request that you support these in front of you today. And that concludes our presentation.
So I have a question. What is the mechanism that's used to actually cause a street that is currently unpaved or a neighborhood that doesn't have a paved street or a sidewalk to actually have that happen with what you are proposing? Do they have to self-initiate that?
So there's two ways. One is if you're not developing, your residents that live out there and you're tired of your gravel street, you can either do a permit, a public works permit, or you can now, through this initiative, do it through a local improvement district. But no one's forcing you to do that. If you're a developer and you're faced with a requirement by the city to do street improvements as a result of your development, then you will have to go through this process of a public works permit. You know, sometimes you can corral the rest of the neighbors on the street to do a local improvement district that's for the entire block, but usually that doesn't happen. So there's nothing in this proposal that forces anybody that's not developing to develop their street. Yeah, what we're giving them is new tools to consider.
Okay. And just to underscore that it might be lost, it's a small distinction with a huge impact, and that is we've, up until now, our LID financing, which is a financing that's is currently only available on the traditional street. And so not only have we required sort of a version of all or nothing, and even the cheap and skinny streets turned out to be skinny, mm-hmm. not very cheap. So we didn't have a lot of uptake on them. So we're trying to offer people the, as you've said, the more inexpensive design options, and for the first time, allowing them to do the Bancroft financing, which is also known as LID.
Right.
One thing that we talked about in our work on this last couple of years is how maybe it's for the next presentations, is how small can an LID be? If a group of folks want to pave from curb to curb, as opposed to we tend to think of LIDs as much larger, how much success have we had in the staff work of allowing that smaller LID units?
So Andrew's been doing some of those. I think one just last year was a partial street. So definitely there's flexibility within that program. This gives more flexibility. I can ask Andrew to come up and maybe give a description of that in addition to answer sure. Commissioner Fritz's question.
Can I throw maybe an additional question?
Yeah.
So under the sort of the hardship provision, you mm-hmm. say there's 80% below MFI. So it said within 2 years, if alternative financing isn't, or you're giving them a two-year window to secure financing, does that mean if they don't secure alternative financing, it automatically reverts to an LID after 2 years?
What we were going to do is give ourselves 2 years to come up with financing to help implement this program. There's going to be a slight increase in cost, and the deferral package is proposed to incur interest, but that it would be paid by through the LID. There'd be some increased administration costs as well with the deferral program. And so that's the financing package that we are asking for ourselves to identify. So,
And it's actually based on somewhat on the past work that Andrew has done, but also on Lana's work on the sewer reconnection sort of financing program and sort of the flexibility and the lessons learned from that financial assistance program. Mr. Abbey, welcome back.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. The deferral ordinance that is before you doesn't actually create the deferral program. It authorizes the creation of a deferral program once we can identify an internal funding source within PBOT to make those deferrals happen. So the two-year time frame, I think Christine recapped this pretty well, but the two-year time frame just is the period in which we identify that funding source, and one way or another we report back to council within 2 years. One thing I should mention with respect to deferrals and other safety net programs like low-income grants, they've been, regardless of the standards, they have been extraordinarily effective in attracting property owner support for LIDs. What's very interesting is when we offered some safety net programs on some subsidized LIDs, the participation rate was actually quite a bit lower at when we did final assessment for the LID than what we thought it would be at the beginning, just because, and I did a quick analysis for Christine, but bear in mind this was building the traditional street standard, but I looked at two LIDs that we completed, and the average annual increase in property valuation on one LID was about 10%. About 18 or 19% on the other. So what happened was property owners, after the LID was completed, put their homes up for sale, realized a big capital gain on their properties, and in the end didn't really need the deferral. So I think that's the framework that we're aiming for. We just need to, you know, work out the details in terms of how to make it happen.
And that was very similar to what Lana experienced with the financing options for the Bureau of Environmental Services for all the clay pipe sewers that connections between houses and sewers. There was a lot more turnover than she had anticipated, and there's a lot more revenue, but it's going to take us time to figure out that.
Right.
And also, there was a question earlier about how small LIDs
yeah.
can go. The shortest one that I've done that I can recall was 160 feet, so a little less than one downtown city block. And I think it's important to note that whatever standards you decide to adopt, any LID that comes to council will always approve the scope of that particular LID. So that's always determined individually with each LID that comes before you. The other project I would just mention is when you approved Northeast 112th and Marks earlier this year, on one street, 112th Avenue, we're building the full curb-to-curb build-out. On Mark Street, we're actually only building half of the street with the idea that the other half will be built upon future redevelopment. So even within the existing street standards, we've certainly endeavored to be creative and flexible, and council, of course, will have the full discretion to continue doing that with future LIDs.
Thanks. One thing that I think we're going to be able to market here is I think LIDs are traditionally, even though you've pointed out and done smaller LIDs, I think the public thinks of LIDs as big, sort of massive projects, and I think marketing around, you could get together with your neighbors and get a block done if you wanted to. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Andrew, what would the is there a change in the state law that would be necessary to allow property by property, to allow somebody who's not in an area where it would qualify for the low-income deferral, but who happens to be a family living below the poverty rate? Is there something that we could get changed in state law to allow that?
Is your question related to who gets included in an LID and gets assessed,
no,
or just with respect to the deferral?
The deferral.
Yeah, the criteria that's in the deferral ordinance, Rich and Christine worked on the street standards ordinance. I worked on the deferral ordinance. But the criteria for the deferral ordinance was modeled on previous safety net programs that we've offered with subsidy. So that is not set in stone. That's not a state law per se. What we were trying to do is to identify criteria so that we weren't offering the deferral in all situations, recognizing that PBOT had to come up with the funding for the deferral, so we're just trying to target the deferral for those who we thought would especially need the deferral.
That'd be interesting as you move forward on this to look at that one family who's currently out of unemployed or whatever, but it's so that the whole LID doesn't qualify, but that family might be able to, and if there's something we could do as a city on a citywide basis to give assistance to folks who would certainly like to reap the benefits but just can't afford it right now.
Well, and one point of clarification I should make, one LID that we offered on Southeast 128th Avenue, we actually didn't have the threshold that we needed of people in the LID, but the federal criteria was not who was in the LID, it was who was using the street. In this particular instance, it was a street that connected a larger neighborhood to Foster Road, and so we were able to do an income survey beyond the actual LID established at 51% of the people using the street, not necessarily being assessed for the LID would benefit, and then we were able to offer the deferral. But again, that's our own internal criteria, which this or a future council is certainly welcome to change.
So just so that I'm clear, is there any state or federal law that would prohibit us from not having to qualify a geographic boundary in order to just offer low-income assistance to a property owner?
If there's no federal funding involved, and the way this, as I understand that this is set up, we're still planning on having everything funded by the LID. So there's no federal or state law that precludes who we offer the deferral to.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing is that when we do impose the assessments, they have to be on a timely basis. So the big rub that we were working with is we can't complete an LID and then wait 5 years to assess it under IRS rules. We have to assess it in a more timely fashion. So that's where the internal PBOT funding comes in, because we're not using the tax-exempt financing that's subject to federal law.
I think Jennifer Cooperman, the city treasurer, could talk about how we can't discriminate within an LID.
Treasurer Cooperman.
Good afternoon, everyone. In order to be eligible to use tax-exempt funding, the financing has to be offered to everyone in that LID equally. So we would lose the tax exemption if we were to do it property by property within the LID, which would have the impact of increasing the cost, since taxable financing costs are traditionally more expensive than tax exempt, which is one consideration in this whole process.
And you could structure something that would tell us what the difference is and allow the LID folks to choose.
Sure, or the homeowner.
Oh, yeah, you could, couldn't you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that if everybody feels bad for the one family that's currently struggling, they could say, yeah, we'll go for the non-tax-exempt financing. I don't know what the difference in the actual cost, you know, whether that would be tens of thousands or not. But yeah. Anyway, as you continue to explore this, I'd like you to look into that a little more.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all very much. We'll now turn to our invited testimony, which Marianne Fitzgerald, Don Bach, Justin Wood, and Glenn Bridger. The citizens superstars of neighborhood transportation and housing.
Well, thank you.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Mayor Adams and City Commissioners. My name is Mary Ann Fitzgerald. I'm the president of Southwest Neighborhoods, coalition of 17 neighborhood associations and three business associations in Southwest Portland. And we have many miles of streets that could benefit from this program. We also have many miles of streets that look like this program. So it just seems very familiar to us. So our transportation committee and our board did look at the design concepts, and we do support the design concepts and the street-by-street initiative. But we wanted to point out a few provisions, that the streets improved under the standards in the initiative, and all currently existing streets with similar levels of improvement be maintained at the standards currently required for sidewalks, because the bicyclists, the pedestrians, and those with disabilities have no other choice but to walk on the streets, so we want to make sure that the streets are just as safe to walk on as the sidewalk standards would be. And we also ask that the streets improved under the standards and all currently existing streets with similar levels of improvement have the speed limits set at 15 miles per hour and that traffic calming measures are used so that the vehicles actually observe the 15 mile per hour limit. And we're really looking forward to the flexibility in this program, and we want to work with you and with staff as we pilot this, as these projects move forward, because we do have some challenges, as Christine described in her presentation, and this really could make a difference in getting some projects actually done. So thank you for inviting us today.
Thank you very much.
Our Harry Mayor Sam, good morning, and commissioners. I'm Don Bach. I chair or am president of Southwest Trails PDX. I'm speaking for them when I testify. We wholeheartedly support this proposal. This will help improve our streets in Southwest considerably. As has been pointed out, we have somewhere around 120 miles of streets that actually were built to city standards at the time they were built. And my street was built in 1928, and it was built no curbs, no sidewalks, and 18-foot width. Since we've got so many of these streets, I think it's really important that we provide for traffic calming to 85 percentile, 15 miles an hour, some method to do this, including the ability to finance this. I know this is a reach and it's mission creep to some degree, but on the other hand, for the people that live here and walk on these streets, and our trails group walks every month multiple miles, not always 13, Sam, but we usually get out and get quite a few miles.
I will never forget that day.
But in any event, this is really important, and I really would appreciate it to think through how we can put this in so, you know, the people who need walk in more livable streets, because I've had neighbors in our street on Burlingame Avenue, which is a cut-through, move because the traffic was so fast, and their children felt unsafe on the street. They felt unsafe in the street.
Are there any for sale there right now?
I think there's one, Randy, but it won't be there long. The price is too low. That's the reason. But nevertheless, the turnover, it affects communities when you have turnover. And that to me, what we want to do is not have people move for cause, but rather the opportunities and so on otherwise. The service quality and issues that Marianne has identified are really important, and we wholeheartedly support those. I'd like to move to implementation, and that would be, I think, if we do this like you normally would, we'll build a street and then we'll work on the traffic calming. I would suggest a parallel action. So we take, let's go for the traffic calming stuff. We've never done 15 miles an hour, to my knowledge, officially in the city. Take that on and look at the chicanes and the Woonerfs and the speed bumps that are appropriate for that as an independent section of things we do. We've got a lot of streets that we could do it right now on, and do those and figure out how that works, because it's going to give you demonstration projects when people are looking now. Oh, I can do my gravel street, but people will be driving too fast, say, no, go over here and look at this street. We already fixed it. It works. That's the kind of salesmanship I think we need to make this thing really saleable, and I think you get a lot of buyers. Once they drive down, say, I see what you mean, because telling people it's going to be traffic calm by 15 miles an hour, and they'll say, yeah, uh-huh, mm-hmm, right, yeah, and my water bill's not going up. So anyway, it's just the kind of thing that I think you make a lot more believers out of them when we do that. And finally, vegetation. I've been working on the Pedestrian Advisory Committee with staff for over a year on trying to get vegetation management on streets without sidewalks addressed in a comprehensive way. And quite frankly, because of lack of staff, we haven't done that in the city. We went around with the person in charge of this some months ago, and he basically said, hey, you know, there aren't any real specific rules that we're supposed to maintain our streets to a way that's safe for kids to walk or wheelchairs. And as a result, someone can be in a wheelchair, someone come around with a car, even at 15 miles an hour, and it'd be a disastrous accident because you can't move that fast to get out of the way, and you haven't got any choices. So vegetation management on curves, corners, I'm not so much worried about along the street. That becomes a traffic calming thing. But on the curves and corners, it's really important. And I understand Christine has told us that she's going to be addressing that. That's really important. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and members of council. My name is Justin Wood, and I'm here representing the Portland Home Builders Association, as well as I'm an infill builder here in Portland with Fish Construction. I want to thank you for allowing me to testify before you in support of this proposal. I've served on the Street by Street Committee and its various predecessors that we've had over the years, and I'd like to thank PBOT and BES staff, as well as all the other stakeholders, including Mary Ann and several other people in this room, for their hard work and trying to find a solution that worked for this for everybody. I think the standard you've been presented with provides a great basis for beginning the process of improving neighborhood streets across the city. The design allows for a more functional, cost-effective way for neighbors and developers to provide usable streets throughout the city in neighborhoods. This base design also will allow us a foundation to establish an in lieu of fee, which Christine mentioned earlier, where developers can pay into a fund where a street improvement is not practical in every circumstance. Also, while this program will help streets develop in some areas, it's my belief that if we want to improve all the city streets to this base standard, then the next step we need to do is to take this standard to the next level in determining a funding mechanism to improve all streets to this standard over a specific period of time. In closing, I believe that what has been developed is a good program and a good start, and I ask council to consider approving it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're welcome to return to your seats. Thanks. Who signed up?
We have one more person, and Andy Johnson.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you for letting me speak. As nervous as I am, I wanted to, just because of the situation I find myself in, lend my voice to support for this. I'm a private citizen. In 2006, my wife and I built our dream house. It was on the 2008 Build It Green tour. It's on an infill lot in southeast Portland. When in preliminary discussions with BDS, we were told we would need to sign a letter of non-remonstrance. When we submitted our architect design plans for the house, we were told that the policy had changed, and we were responsible for the entire street improvement requirements in and of ourselves. So at the time, the estimate was $55,000 for those street improvements. We had significant investment in the design of the house, and were advised in the meetings with the city that the value of the houses was on the record and the value of the lot would be decreased by that amount. So we went ahead and went forward with the permit and signing the residential street improvement bond. So fast forward, we were given a few years to complete the improvements. Fast forward a few years later, and $25,000 in various engineering and review fees, and it turns out that the costs are right in line with what is being presented here. As you know, property values have decreased, so we're basically looking for a way forward in our situation, and this seems like for our other people, if not for us at this point, that this would be a situation. If you do the math, the value of the lot is assessed at perhaps $100,000, and the cost of the improvements are looking to be, when you put in the system development charges, 1.5 or higher times the value of the lot. So for what that means for this particular situation, I just want to say that I think this is a beneficial thing going forward for development of infill lots.
Thank you for taking the time to come to council and sharing your experience, and that's a key reason why we're moving on this. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right, so these are non-emergency ordinances, but it is the holiday times, and folks like Mr. Johnson, I think, deserves a Christmas or holiday present. So I would move we apply the emergency clause to these ordinances.
In order to.
in order to spur the paving and improving the life and safety on existing gravel streets and to benefit those that are in process.
Second.
So moved and seconded. And can you please call the vote on the motion to add an emergency clause?
That was the same clause for both of these?
Yes.
Okay. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So can you please call the vote for item 1357, which is now an emergency ordinance?
Leonard?
This is an excellent program.